All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. We got a lot of injuries to tell you about. You had some opportunities to buy low on players that you no longer can buy low on. Chris Archer, Miguel Cabrera, welcome to the show. I'm Adam Azer, Chris Towers, Heath Cummings. What up, dudes?
I'd like to take a moment at the beginning of the podcast. Sometimes I may come across as being overly negative. I wanted to say Chris was
No, you're thinking of a different Heath Cummings.
Chris was here on time, in fact, a little bit early today, really prepared, so we were able to get started right when we expected to.
You're welcome, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Good job. Of course, I was late, which is what Heath is alluding to. There's never sincere niceness.
Oh, Heath is completely constitutionally incapable of sincere compliments.
Incorrect.
It does appear that way. Hey, you know what? No, before we go on, Heath, I want you to give both me and Chris one sincere compliment apiece. Mean it.
Okay, Adam?
Uh-huh.
You are the best podcast host at CBSSports.com.
See? Even that is a backhanded insult.
You are nominated on the Fantasy Football Podcast for a podcast award, and you would be a very deserving winner.
Well, actually, first compliment Chris, and then we'll come back to that.
Well, see, I just want to point out all that is a backhanded insult at me.
Yeah, it's kind of true because Chris hosts the Daily Fantasy Live podcast, so that wasn't it.
Well, I see through you. Heath.
I've hosted it more than he has, and I'm saying you're better than me.
I'm currently. You didn't say that.
He said he's the best one here.
I'll take what I could get.
You do a phenomenal job keeping track of multiple sports, probably better than anybody else.
That's true. That is sincere. You do a great job.
What are we talking about today?
Let's talk about fantasy baseball today. Also, yeah, as Heath mentioned, if you listen to our fantasy football podcast, it would be really cool of you if you would go to podcastawards.com and nominate our podcast for the best sports podcast category. You can also nominate us for the People's Choice, but best sports category. Here's what you do. You nominate CBS Sports Fantasy Football Today podcast and use our RSS feed. You can get that at cbssports.com/podcast, where you can learn about all of our podcasts. So please go to podcastawards.com and nominate the CBS Sports Fantasy Football Today podcast. Use our RSS feed for the URL that they asked for. Guys, let's
do it right now.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Let's get to the show, because as I mentioned yesterday, I do want to talk about some top 12 surprises along the infield. I looked at first base, second base, third base, and short. And I came up with two surprises at each position. Guys like Neil Walker, Eugenio Suarez, Mark Trumbo. You'd be surprised who's in the top 12 right now and just how high up they are. We also have to talk about Chris Archer, Zach Greinke, etc. But let's start with some injuries. Start on a down note with Travis d'Arnaud likely headed to the DL with a shoulder injury. Kevin Plawecki would be the guy to pick up in the for the Mets. Now, tell me, you know, if you're struggling in a two-catcher league, how interested are you in Kevin Plawecki?
I mean, the minor league numbers are pretty good. This is a guy who struck out very rarely, about 11% of the time in the minors, hit 290, got on base at a decent pace. I don't know if I'm, like, rushing out to add him, but if I've been relying on, I don't know, somebody that just hasn't been very helpful so far, yeah, I might look at him.
The question I had immediately, because I do have several, I have d'Arnaud on several teams, and I also have a ton of guys. I don't think I have a disabled list spot open in any league. So I don't know how long I want to hold on to d'Arnaud, because he's been awful so far. And somebody had mentioned earlier, it might have been on Twitter, it might have been on the email, I'm not sure, about how we seem to be showing more patience with d'Arnaud than Mesoraco. And that's kind of right. They've both been terrible.
Yes, it's true.
D'Arnaud's been helpful more recently.
You can't drop Travis d'Arnaud unless you really can't, like, stash him. I mean, no, look, you can drop him. I take that back. But
I was saying, in a one catcher league, if you don't, like, I've got one league at least where not only do I not have a DL spot open, but I'm currently have Tyson Ross on my bench DL. I don't think I can have two players on my bench in the DL.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. So d'Arnaud having a disappointing season, and he's always injury prone, so this was a risk you took. Now, Carlos Carrasco could miss 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. That's a guy you do want to keep on your bench. Yeah. You don't want to be dropping Carlos Carrasco. and Trevor Bauer likely to be in the Indians rotation. Michael Brantley is going to start today. Charlie Blackman could come off the DL on Friday. Now, this is interesting for all the Salt of La Macchia owners. Alex Avila could begin a rehab assignment soon. What do you think happens when Avila is ready to come back?
I think it's probably going to really cut into Deonor Navarro's playing time.
What?
I don't think Alex Avila is the issue for Jared Salt of La Macchia, right?
Wait.
Doesn't Alex Avila play for the White Sox?
Thank you. So, Heath Cummings, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. My mistake there. Yes, Alex Avila.
McCann is starting a rehab assignment.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know why I put Avila. James McCann is starting a rehab assignment soon. Wow.
You did say you were tired.
I am really tired from traveling yesterday, so I do apologize. So how does James McCann's rehab assignment impact Jared Salt of La Macchia?
I don't think James McCann's lost his job. I think when he comes back, he's still going to play more often than Salt of La Macchia is. No matter how, I mean, yes, Jared Salt of La Macchia has hit the cover off the baseball. I don't think anybody believes he's actually this good, though.
Well, and, not this good, but his numbers with the Diamondbacks last year were really solid as well.
Right, but McCann's like their catcher of the future, right?
I mean, he's 25. It's not like...
That's young.
It's not that young.
I thought I was the ageist. 25's not young now?
Well, it's 25's not so young that you're like, whoa, we definitely need to develop this guy. James McCann hasn't shown an ability to hit right-handed pitching in the majors. Jared Salt of La Macchia crushes right-handed pitching. I think they're kind of a perfect platoon. And it wouldn't... I mean, you may be right. They may view it that way. I think that would be a poor utilization of their available roster resources.
I mean, in fairness to McCann, he's got like 300 plate appearances against right-handed pitching.
And they've been bad.
He has been bad for 300 plate appearances.
Okay, this is boring me. We have so much more fun stuff to talk about. I just wanted to give the Jared Salt of La Macchia and I guess... unintentionally, Deonor Navarro owners, something to consider. And Minnesota sent Byron Buxton and Max Kepler to AAA. They recalled Danny Santana and Alex Meyer. Any reason to stash Buxton?
I think we should take a moment to recognize that Billy Hamilton's lucky he didn't come up in Minnesota.
Well, he stole 2 bases yesterday. So.
The thing is, like, Byron Buxton's going to go down to the minor leagues and hit.
Right.
I don't know if they're just hoping he gets his confidence. I don't know what the sign for them is that, yeah, he's ready now.
Yeah, it's – the Byron Buxton thing is extremely weird to me because he did not have strikeout issues in the minors. Like, he really did not strike – like, he wasn't Michael Brantley in the minors, but he wasn't
– maybe he has trouble with the curve.
That's nothing. You know what? I bet Heath liked that piece of garbage movie.
I've never seen it.
It's one of the worst bit sports movies.
How bad is that? Right? It is so bad.
Talk yesterday about how much he hated it, and so I thought I'd try to work it into the podcast today.
Byron Buxton struck out 19.9% of the time in the minors, and he's at 48% this season, and was like 35% last. Like, it's extremely strange. Like, you usually don't see that kind of gap.
All right. Well, are you stashing him in seasonal leagues, Byron Buxton?
No, probably not.
I mean, unless I've got a really deep roster.
All right. Don't drop him in keeper leagues. And Matt Holliday left with a leg cramp. Jeremy Hazelbaker replaced Holliday and homered. And Hazelbaker has only started one of St. Louis's last 5 games, but he keeps on hitting. So that's interesting. We'll see Holliday's health. I mean, just a leg cramp shouldn't be too serious of a situation, but they were sort of talking about it as if it were more serious than you would think. So,
well, he's not young.
Holliday, yeah. No, he's not. And he got hurt last year. Our email of the day comes from Mike in Danvers, Massachusetts. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com is our email address. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Getting a lot of emails these days. I do appreciate it. We'll try to get to some later today. Mike says, "Dear Adam, Derek, and Scott." I don't really know. I mean, Adam Derek Scott is the full name of the golfer.
Oh.
But I don't really...
Yes, I knew that.
Yeah. What are the chances that Anthony Rendon returns to his production levels of 2 years ago? And then Mike has the audacity to break out a new meter. He says, "Rate Anthony Rendon on the return to form-o meter."
I like it. I think it's one of our best meters.
It's a little wordy, but it's okay. Meters, I like all meters.
I don't want to believe that it's impossible. I mean, do I think there's a chance that he has an 820 OPS the rest of the way? Yeah. I'm more concerned about him not running.
Well,
in front of Bryce Harper.
Here's a list of players who Anthony Rendon has a higher average exit velocity than right now. Adam Jones, George Springer, JD Martinez, Manny Machado, Steven Souza, Andrew McCutcheon, Michael Conforto, Kyle Seager, Chris Davis, Yasiel, a lot of really good players. He has a 38.1% hard hit rate. He's putting the ball in the air quite a bit. He hasn't hit a home run yet this season, but all indications are that he's hitting the ball well, and it's just not finding good spots to land so far. I actually do believe there are reasons to be optimistic about him.
Okay. Be optimistic about Anthony Rendon. Well done. Monday standouts. Yeah, so I didn't buy low. I tried, but I couldn't buy low on Chris Archer. Then he struck out 10 in 6 2/3 scoreless innings with no walks against Baltimore. Do you think Chris Archer is back?
Yeah, totally buy it. No question.
Okay. How about Zach Greinke? I don't think we have to spend too much time on Archer. The guy's really good. We talked about it. It was just really a location thing for him. Zach Greinke, though. Now, the interesting thing about Greinke, he's made 5 starts. He's a 6.16 ERA. All 3 of his bad starts have come at home. So I looked at his ERA at Chase Field when he pitched for the Dodgers. And yes, you are talking about small sample sizes. You're talking
it was phenomenal,
about,
though, right?
Yeah. 13 innings in 2013, 13 a third in 2014, and 15 innings in 2015. And in those 3 years, he had a 1.38, 0.68, and 0.00 ERA. So he was dominant at Chase Field. Do you make anything of this bad start, not just yesterday, but in general, for Zach Greinke?
Listen, it's really weird when we talk about it before the season, because I think we probably spent maybe too much time talking about the regression of Zach Greinke in the preseason. We didn't expect it all to happen in April, but all the things we talked about, him having a 229 BABIP against last year, that's unsustainable. Well, it's 333 this year. It's not going to be that high either. He had an 87% strand rate last year. Nobody does that. Well, it's 63%. It's not going to be that bad either. He only gave up 0.57 home runs per 9 last year, which is like his career best. Now it's 1.47. It's not going to be that high. So I think it's still a decent buy low opportunity. I did not expect Zach Greinke to be as good as he was last year or really anywhere close to it. Hopefully you didn't draft him there. But I'm going to make some more offers.
Yeah. Would you rather have Archer or Greinke rest of season?
I'd probably rather have Archer.
Chris, you have anything to say about Greinke?
I agree with Heath.
Okay. So it's still like a top 15 to 20 pitcher?
I think I have him right around 17 or 18, which is, I mean, I think he'll be a top 20 pitcher.
Felix Hernandez or Zach Greinke?
Felix.
The velocity drop for Felix is a little concerning. I think I'd probably go with Greinke.
Have you looked at Greinke's velocity?
I have not.
I haven't either. I've got it pulled up right here. Now it probably won't include last night's start, but it's not like last night was good. So, so far, probably not including last night, his two seam fastball was down to 89.8.
From?
And it had not been below 91 since 2009.
Okay. Something to keep an eye on then.
Well,
and his
all right, yeah, that
down
is something
to 85.2. It was 86.9 last year.
Okay, something to keep an eye on. Now, neither Greinke nor Felix Hernandez are guys who depend on their velocity, really. Greinke is amazing control, amazing command. And, you know, Heath, we were talking about this yesterday, right, with Miguel Cabrera, with all those first basemen, Archer. I mean, this is the time to buy low. It's only been 3 weeks, and you've got amazing players who have been struggling in some cases. And are there any players that... Okay, here's how I'd frame it as I stumble upon this. Alex Avila, by the way, Detroit catcher now. Are there any stud players that you're genuinely concerned about that you wouldn't buy low on? Anybody that you think is just going to be a bust this year, guys? What do you think?
That's something I've just kind of started to research. I think I'm going to write on it first of next week, because there were 35 players last year in the month of April that had an OPS below 600. That's the cutoff I chose because it's awful. And of the ones that we actually thought would be something, about half of them turned out to be good and half of them turned out to have really disappointing years.
Do you have any names off the top of your head?
Chase Utley. Evan Gaddis.
Well, okay.
Adam Eaton.
These are last year's guys.
Right. Rougned Odor. Jason Kipnis was good. Victor Martinez was bad.
Right.
It seemed like it was about half and half.
But the only two that you've mentioned so far that I think were bad were Utley and Bmart, right?
Gaddis was bad.
Oh, Gaddis.
Gaddis was disappointing.
Gaddis had 27 home runs.
Yeah.
Wasn't a total bust.
I would say this season I'm certainly very worried. I don't know if Carlos Gomez still counts as a bust.
I think so. I mean, we had a lot of questions about him.
Yeah. Because it's more than just this season, because he was pretty disappointing last season. I'm definitely concerned about him. I'm definitely concerned about Alex Rodriguez, just because he's obviously at an age, despite how good he was last season, he's obviously at an age where it could just go at any second.
Yeah, totally.
And Justin Upton striking out 40% of the time. I know he's a streaky player, and right. He tends to go through stretches where he looks lost, and then I'll follow them up with stretches where he looks totally dominant, but this is definitely a bad start for him.
Speaking of streaky outfielders that are in that 15 to 20 outfielder range, I'm starting to get worried about Lorenzo Cain, who really only had one great year. He had a pretty good year, yeah, in 2014, but his strikeout rate's 27%. And I don't think it's ever been above 22 or 23. He's got hitting for almost no power. Now, part of his average issue is his BABIP's really low, and he's always been an extremely high BABIP guy. But I'm a little concerned about Lorenzo Cain.
You know what's kind of an interesting stat to look at right now is how many at-bats teams have had against lefties.
Yeah.
And I started looking at this because of Michael Conforto, and the Mets have had the second fewest at-bats against lefties, ahead of only the Marlins, who somehow have had only 63 at-bats so far against left-handed pitchers. And Conforto doesn't play or doesn't hit well against lefties. Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned Lorenzo Cain, Heath. The Royals are pretty low as well. They have the sixth fewest at-bats so far against lefties, and he made his money last year just mashing lefties. So does that improve your outlook at all on Lorenzo Cain?
It helps a little bit, but I think that, I mean, he wasn't terrible against righties last year. It's not like he just only crushed lefties. He was pretty good against righties as well, and he's been dreadful so far.
And other teams that haven't faced a lot of lefties, Boston. So maybe, I mean, look, David Ortiz is really good, but maybe that batting average comes down a little bit. Pittsburgh has not faced a lot of lefties. Polanco's been in the lineup against lefties recently, though. In fact, I think he homered against a lefty on Friday. And Houston, they have the fifth fewest at bats against lefties. And I actually think that, I think I looked at the splits. I don't know if you guys know off the top of your head, but I think George Springer does really well against left-handed pitchers. In fact, the top three of that order, they're righties, Altuve, Springer, Correa. I think they're going to hit pretty well once they face more left-handed pitchers.
Another player that I am worried about, I think you have to be worried about Freddie Freeman, right?
No.
Why not?
Why would you be? Because I don't think the wrist is an issue. I think he showed in spring training, and spring training stats are deceiving, but when a guy is coming off an injury and he hits for power in spring training, like, that can't be a total fluke. I think I would buy low on Freddie Freeman, absolutely.
I've put in a buy low offer for him, a very low buy low offer for him. It was Hisashi Iwakuma. I don't expect it to be accepted, but...
Oh, I would take Iwakuma for Freddie Freeman if I was that owner.
I mean, you're looking at a guy who's... his strikeout... Basically, everything's moved in the wrong direction this season. His strikeout rate's up. His hard hit rate's down. He's not hitting the ball well. I'm not an intangibles guy either, but you also have to worry about his will to live. I mean, seriously, he's the only competent hitter in his lineup. He has no protection. Pitchers aren't going to throw him anything in the zone.
It's funny. That's what I was just thinking was, why would you ever throw a strike to Freddie Freeman? He's so far this year seen more strikes than he's ever seen at any point in his career because he's not hitting either.
Yeah.
But if he ever gets hot, yeah, I would. There's no way.
I mean, yeah. Look, I'm not saying you give up on him, but I'm certainly worried about him.
He's not. He wouldn't be the first player on a bad team to have a good season, though. I mean,
sure.
We used to worry about
but
that
he,
with Ryan Braun.
He has kind of everything against him. I mean, even at his best, we're thinking he's going to hit a ton of doubles, right? And so he needs some runs and some RBIs. And I don't know how you get runs and RBIs in that offense. It's
I mean, that was a problem.
Historically bad offense.
I'm also
go ahead.
I'm a little bit worried about D. Gordon.
Oh, come on, Chris.
Swinging straight. Look, this is a guy who relied really heavily on putting the ball in play and getting really good results when the ball was in play. He was never going to be able to replicate last season. But his swinging strike rate is up pretty significantly. It's up 50% over last season. His contact rate is down. Everything's kind of moving in the wrong direction for him, in addition to the expected regression.
Now, there's one thing. We looked at this last year, and I don't remember what site we found it on, but I'm sure you'll know right away. I feel like the level of competition that the Marlins have faced in terms of opposing starting pitchers has been higher than just about anybody.
I can actually look that up.
I know you can. Because I know they've got Kershaw tonight, so it's not going to get easier. But I know they've seen the Mets, they've seen the Nats,
yeah.
They've seen the Giants. I mean, sure, they got three games against the Braves, but I feel like he's faced some really tough pitchers early in the year.
But he hasn't faced any lefties because they've had 63 at-bats against left-handers, the Marlins.
Yeah, well, I would rather face a bad lefty than Scherzer, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Harvey, the likes.
They didn't face Bumgarner. But all right, Chris, you looked that up. Let's move on. Heath, and let's talk about Albert Pujols.
Okay.
So he hit two home runs yesterday, and over the last two seasons, he has been kind of a spurty player. He's gotten a lot of his production in shorter stretches. Right now, Pujols is batting 171 with five home runs and one double. And this guy hit 40 home runs yesterday. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody to be worried about, I think you could make a case for Pujols. Where are you on Mr. Albert Pujols?
I mean, I think it kind of makes sense that a player that has his elite skill set still, but is getting to the age to where that's diminishing, that he kind of goes through streaks where his timing's on. He still has that power, but everything has to work right now. And so I think it makes some sense that he'd be streaky. When his timing's on, he's still crushing the ball like he was 28 years old. And when it's off, he looks awful. That 171 average, his strikeout rate is higher than it's ever been in his career, but it's still only 14.5%. Mostly it's a 136 BABIP. He's going to be a low BABIP guy with his profile, but he's not going to be a 136 BABIP guy.
No, but didn't he have the lowest BABIP in baseball last year?
I think he did. Yeah, and it was still 80 points higher than it is right now.
Right. Who would you rather have, Freeman or Pujols?
What's that?
Freeman or Pujols?
I believe I have Freeman higher in points and Pujols higher in Roto.
Okay. And Nate Eovaldi. Nate Eovaldi flirted with a no-no yesterday, 70% owned. Here's one good thing about Eovaldi, because from a fantasy perspective, I mean, he's had bad ERA and an absolutely terrible whip. Terrible whip. Career 1.4 whip, and it was 1.45 last year. He just hasn't been that good. But
right.
he is striking out a lot of guys. I think he had seven starts dating back to last season, seven straight starts of seven strikeouts or more until last night. He only struck out six in seven innings. So Eovaldi at least is doing that. I still think he's overowned at 70%, but an impressive start last night, guys, for Nate Eovaldi.
That was that's actually a trend there's a trend going back to about the middle of last year, I believe, when he started really relying on his splitter a lot more, and it started leading to a lot more strikeouts.
And that was the key for him last night. He had an amazing splitter.
What was that?
Last night he had an amazing splitter. I didn't get to watch the game because the TVs were out on JetBlue, but from everything I read, he had a great split finger last night.
The The TVs were not working on my airplane hurtling through the sky at 450 miles per hour is the most first world problems thing I've ever heard.
I'm just saying, I thought I would be able to watch the game. I'm not complaining. They're giving everybody on the flight a $50 voucher for a future JetBlue flight.
Well, there you go.
Yes. But anyway, Nate Evaldi, I still think Evaldi's overowned, even in a two-star week at 70. I guess in a two-star week in general.
I think in a two-star week, that's about right.
Yeah, all right, fine. Are you going to take the Matt Latos approach with him and consider dropping him after this week?
I don't know who his matchup is next week, but probably. Probably.
Okay.
You know who I actually think of more when I think of Nate Evaldi right now is Rick Porcello. Like the really impressive strikeout rate, but I don't really like all of the other things he's doing, and I don't totally trust how he's getting there. So I just wanted to make that comparison.
Well, they're back-to-back in Al's rankings, actually, right around 60th overall, 61st and 62nd. And Porcello had another good start yesterday. He's certainly taken advantage, Rick Porcello, of good matchups. He has faced that's not true. Let me back up. He's faced Tampa Bay and Atlanta in his last two starts. So in those starts, Porcello has faced weak competition. But his first two starts were at Toronto and home against Toronto. And I've made the point that the Blue Jays they're starting to come out of it, but earlier in the season they hadn't really been hitting. But Porcello, 5 walks, 30 strikeouts, and 25 and two-thirds. He's 80% owned. He's got a 3.51 ERA. I think he's pitched better than the ERA because he's going pretty deep into games. What do you guys think about Rick Porcello right now?
I mean, Al was the highest on us, of us, on him this year, and I think Al kind of looks like he's right. I think, now the thing that Al will tell you is what got him so excited was it Porcello's sinker or his slider? One of the two had much better movement in the last 9 or 10 starts of last year, and Al really bought into that. And that has completely regressed. It's not the truth. It did not carry over to this year, but he's still been good. I'd rather have Porcello than Evaldi.
I think that's probably fair at this point.
All right. I still wouldn't hesitate. I don't think I would hesitate to drop Porcello if somebody were out there on waivers that I really liked. Would you be giving up huge upside here? Like, would you be?
No.
No? You don't think so?
I don't think there's a huge upside. It really depends on your pitching staff. If you've got 4 or 5 spots locked in and you're just going to need one starter every week, then yeah, I think dropping him makes sense. But there is some value in having guys like Porcello, Volquez, Kennedy, if they're your fourth starter.
Mm-hmm. All right, fellas, let's play a game. Who would you rather have rest of season? And it is, I feel like Chris, I'm looking at Chris's face via Skype, and I think he's still trying to find out the solution. Are the Marlins facing the toughest pitchers in baseball?
No, actually, it appears Baseball Prospectus tracks that, but not for teams. They track it for players, and there are a bunch of Rays in the top and no Marlins in the top 50. So,
okay,
you know, it doesn't appear to be the answer.
Well, let's play Who Would You Rather Have Rest of Season. And again, it's going to call back on a lot of things that we saw last night. So, who would you rather have rest of season? Taijuan Walker or Marcus Stroman or Jordan Zimmermann? Who's your favorite? Walker, Stroman, Zimmermann?
I think Walker has the most upside because of the strikeout potential. I think he's the one of those three that has the greatest chance to finish as like a top 15 pitcher.
I agree with that completely. At the same time, I would say I think Jordan Zimmermann is going to, if you're talking about what's the most likely outcome, I believe it's Jordan Zimmermann finishing ahead of him in both formats. But I think Walker is the one that could finish top 15. I know for sure my answer is not Marcus Stroman.
Are you buying
Marcus Stroman? I struggle with because the apparent upside is really high. Like with that kind of stuff, with the strikeout or with the ground ball rate that he gets, like there's a chance he goes all Dallas Keuchel on the world. And like really just becomes this world-destroying monster.
For every Dallas Keuchel, there are 10 pitchers with that profile that are just middling.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think he's probably pretty good. Like, I think he's Jaime Garcia. And then there's the Dallas Keuchel upside.
Jaime Garcia, that is selling Marcus Stroman very short.
I thought it was a pretty...
Jaime Garcia has really not had a very...
If, If Jaime Garcia threw 190 innings this year with a 3.5 ERA, striking out 7/9, that's pretty Jaime Garcia, right?
Yeah, that's. I would be very disappointed if Marcus Stroman had a 3.5 ERA. I think
that's his career ERA.
He's a much better pitcher. He's had such a short career. Are you kidding me?
190 innings.
That's, come on. He's a better pitcher than that. I think.
Like I said, the apparent upside with Marcus Stroman is great. The actual production hasn't been as great.
I don't know. Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm forgetting. Obviously, Stroman was really good last year.
In four starts.
Yeah, and then into the postseason.
He had a 3.65 as a rookie, and he's got a 4.37 in five starts this year.
He had a 4.19 ERA in the postseason.
4.19 in the postseason?
Yeah. Look, okay. I get it. I really get what is exciting about Marcus Stroman. It's just the actual results are mostly just okay.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I know he doesn't strike out a ton, but so would you rather have Marcus Stroman or Colin McHugh?
Stroman.
Stroman.
Stroman or Yordano Ventura?
Stroman.
Ventura.
All right, Taijuan Walker. I mean, huge start last night. He's got a 1.44 ERA, 25 strikeouts to three walks. Had been getting really a lot of ground balls in his first three starts. So Chris mentioned his upside. I guess that we can just leave it at that with Walker. But how about Zimmerman, guys? 0.35 ERA. I'm going to ask, are you buying it? I know you're not buying a 0.35 ERA, but are you buying this bounce-back season for Jordan Zimmerman?
I actually wrote about him on Friday last week, and I think the point is we get too caught up in, well, he's got a 0.35 ERA, and he's not striking anybody out. There's no way he can be this good. No, duh, he can't be this good. But for three years, he was basically a right around 3 ERA pitcher with about 7 strikeouts per 9 and 200 innings per year. I don't see any reason he can't be that.
I was worried about the American League.
I think that's a really interesting question, because when I watched his, not this start, but the start before, Rick Sutcliffe was doing, it was on ESPN, Rick Sutcliffe was doing the broadcast, and he talked a lot about how the advantage, even though he's going to the American League, the advantage is really his the first time through the league, because nobody's really seen him, and so they're taking pitches, and that's what he needs, is hitters to take pitches.
All right, well, is that going to change
in today's day and age how much I buy the whole, we haven't seen this guy that's been pitching in the league for 5 years, and we have video of every pitch he's ever thrown?
I buy it to a degree. I think it's advantage pitcher, but is that going to? I wonder if that's going to change the second time he faces hitters. You know, we kind of talked about that with Kenta Maeda yesterday. And
yeah, the thing is, within a baseball season, there's not going to be very many teams that he's definitely going to see twice.
I guess what I, with him, it was like, Zimmerman had such a disappointing year last year, and that was with the Braves and the Phillies. And the Marlins, that, you know, weren't really a tough matchup either. And this year, you know, the AL Central just seems like should be a pretty solid division.
It's going to be a pretty solid division, but I don't think it's going to be a good offensive. Like, the Twins are terrible.
I think the Twins are a lot worse right now than we expected. They've got good hitters. They've got some good hitters. They're not a great team, but, you know, the Royals can obviously hit. The Indians have some hitters. The other team in the division, the White Sox, they have hitters too. Everybody has hitters.
All teams have hitters.
They do. I was looking into this the other day.
At least 9 of them every day.
Every team does have hitters. All right, let's move on to our next one.
Well, I do want to just really quickly double back on Taijuan Walker.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of talk last season about his final 20 starts when he had a 3.62 ERA, but a sterling strikeout to walk ratio. That's been the case this season as well. I think we are seeing the Taijuan Walker breakout.
I buy it.
He's throwing his curveball twice as much as last season. The splitter is a true plus pitch. I really like what we're seeing from Taijuan Walker right now.
So far, strikeouts are down. Ground balls are up. Let's go to the next one. Who would you rather have rest of the season? Miguel Cabrera and his 2 home runs yesterday, or Andrew McCutchen and his really bad start?
This is so tough with players that play different positions.
Well, fine. If you were drafting, who would you draft first?
McCutchen.
McCutchen.
Yeah, so that's kind of answers the question, doesn't it? Do you feel better about Miguel Cabrera today than you did yesterday?
Yeah, yes. I do feel better about him today, for sure.
Are you being sarcastic? Because
I got several thank you tweets last night for talking bad about him on the podcast yesterday, so that he did two home runs last night.
Reverse Jakes. There it is. And who would you rather have rest of the season, Michael Conforto or Adam Eaton? Conforto is the number 18 outfielder in points, number 21 in roto. Why so low despite his 333, 435, 614 slash line? Because only two outfielders that have that rank ahead of him in points in roto have fewer at-bats than Conforto. Yep. So that is something to keep in mind. But who would you rather have, Conforto or Eaton?
I think I'd take Conforto in roto and Eaton in points.
I think I'd rather have Eaton in either.
Are you looking? Are we looking at a true Michael Conforto breakout?
I just, can you really break out if you're not guaranteed an everyday role?
But I don't, like, I don't think right now. It'll be interesting because the Mets face a lefty today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been exceptionally hot.
Red hot, yes.
Let's see if he plays.
I
would have a hard time if I was the Mets. You got plenty of players on that team that you could bench against a lefty.
Not right now because of Cespedes. It depends if Cespedes is healthy. Because he's been out, I think, four straight games with the thigh bruise. So,
right.
That is something to keep in mind. But they have what? They have Alejandro de Haza.
Who is a lefty, right?
Yeah. They have Juan Lagares.
He can play for Granderson, who can't hit lefties.
They're not taking Granderson out of the lineup. I think that's... Well, yeah. I mean, maybe they'll give him a day. But I don't know. Until Cespedes is healthy, we don't really know what's going to happen with Conforto against lefties. But
right.
It's also just... To go back one more time, Andrew McCutchen had a 610 OPS 365 days ago. He finished the season with a 920 OPS.
I know, but he had a leg injury the first time. But you're right. There's another guy. This is your chance to buy low on Andrew McCutchen.
Yes.
Like don't blow it. Today, yeah. Before he plays tonight, of course.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was like, I better get my Chris Archer offers in before game time tonight, and I didn't, so... All right, guys, I want to tell everybody about FanDuel. First of all, if you need FanDuel help, you can listen to the podcast that Chris Towers, the best host at CBS Sports, now hosts, the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. They'll help you with your FanDuel lineup every single day. You can play Daily Fantasy Baseball on FanDuel. It is so much fun. You make a lineup. You don't have to worry, oh, yeah, I got Carlos Carrasco on my team. He's hurt. No, not on FanDuel. You get whoever you want. You make a new lineup every single day. You can make multiple lineups every single day. And contests start at just $1. So if you love fantasy baseball, you will love playing on FanDuel. You get to compete against other people who think they know their stuff, but you're going to be better because you listen to our podcast. So play on FanDuel right now. And if you're a new user, sign up with our promo code HOMERUN. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner on FanDuel.com and sign up with that promo code HOMERUN. And if you enter your first league with that promo code, either win a cash prize or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. That's FanDuel.com. Start playing right now. Some more news and notes. Josh Donaldson DH because of a leg issue. Russell Martin out again with the neck stiffness. Ian Kinsler, flu-like symptoms. I've learned this year, flu-like symptoms, they might mean like food poisoning or something, and they're just trying to be delicate. So
Or hangover.
It's not always the flu. Brandon Phillips day-to-day, he was hit by a pitch by Noah Syndergaard. Yoenis Cespedes was out again with a bruised thigh. By the way, Heath, you mentioned that I didn't even let Chris talk about Noah Syndergaard today.
Go.
No, not letting him. You mean me go. Trevor Plouffe should be back today. Eduardo Nunez has been so good in his absence. See what happens there. Freddie Freeman was dropped to sixth in the order. That's temporary. Adonis Garcia for Atlanta. He's made seven errors at third base. He's going to play some outfield until Ender Inciarte returns. Nick Hundley's off the DL, and Yovani Gallardo had at least 4 weeks with a shoulder injury. And Kevin Gausman started yesterday, so we'll talk about that. Here's a category called Dude, Where's My Steals?
Wait, just really quickly, I want to talk about... No, I'm just kidding.
You want to talk about Dude, Where's My Car?
No, I was going to talk about Noah Syndergaard.
Noah Syndergaard, yeah, not today. Mike Trout. Here are four players who haven't been stealing bases. And you tell me if anything really stands out to you. Mike Trout has one steal in two attempts. Manny Machado, no steals in two attempts. He stole 20 bases last year. Paul Goldschmidt, one base in two attempts, career-high 21 steals last year. And George Springer, one steal in four attempts, stole 16 in 20 attempts in 102 games last season. Trout, Machado, Goldschmidt, Springer, absolute studs, top three-round picks, three of those guys first-round picks. Anything really jump out at you? Dude, where's my steals?
I don't think we should be that surprised about, for sure, Trout. Mm-hmm. That's the way he's been trending. I mean, he only stole 11 bases last year. And I don't think like his body shape has changed tremendously since he was a 49 steals guy. He's never going to be a 30 steals guy. I doubt he's ever a 20 steals guy again.
Yeah, I mean, he's built like J.J. Watt, you know.
Right. J.J. Watt's not stealing bases.
They by the way, don't Trout, allow that in football.
Trout no. now
and
hitting
he wouldn't do it anyways because J.J. Watt wouldn't steal.
Trout's now hitting 300, OBP over 400, so he's back. But he's not stealing. That was the easy one.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to steal bases this year. Manny Machado has only been standing on first base 19 times this season by either a single or a walk because he's hitting for too much power. That probably explains why he's not running so much. And I don't think like he has two steals in 19 opportunities on first base. Last season he had 28. What?
Two attempts.
Two stolen base attempts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last season he had 28 stolen base attempts and 185 opportunities on first base. The pace isn't actually that different.
Where do you find these stats?
He just adds hits and walks together.
Yeah. It's real advanced numbers here.
Well, you didn't do fielder's choices. You didn't do hit by pitch.
Man.
He has been, okay, 19. He's been hit by one pitch.
How many fielder's choices do they have?
It's not
what
on
if,
this
what
page.
If he, what if he reached on an error?
Yeah, it's what if he reached on an error?
It's not on this page. It's inaccurate stats from Chris Towers.
You're an inaccurate stat.
All right, fellas. Anything else, by the way? Sorry, Goldschmidt, Springer?
Not particularly, no.
Okay.
No, the fact that Springer's running is more important than the fact that he's not getting steals right now.
I mean, steals are still down everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Gerardo Parra has 5 steals in 6 attempts. He's never stolen more than 15 bases in a season. 14 steals in 18 attempts in 155 games last season. So Parra, 5 steals so far. That's awesome. He's been really good the last couple of weeks. Now, Blackman comes back this weekend. Maybe that puts Parra on the bench against lefties more often. I don't know. But still, that's a good
I would think
sign.
So.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess they'll sit him for Ryan Rayburn.
Who got tossed from last night's game, apparently.
Yeah.
I guess he'll start to sit versus some lefties.
I think he has been. I don't know that he has. I'm not trying to imply that he hasn't been. I'm not 100% sure. But anyway,
I don't think
the steals.
He has been a lot during the time that Blackman's been out.
No.
Okay. All right, whatever. Seems like we don't have much to say about him. So let's go to the rest of the show here. And Garrett Richards, here's your 4-man rotation. Garrett Richards, Danny Salazar, Jaime Garcia, and Julio Teheran. What really stood out to you guys with any of these guys? Richards, Salazar, Garcia, Teheran.
I'll be negative to start, and I'm not super excited about Julio Teheran's start. Because we were talking about
this
yesterday.
Did we lay that out perfectly yesterday or what?
What's that?
We laid that out perfectly yesterday.
I think we nailed it, yeah. I mean, you're facing a Red Sox offense that just played an extra inning game in Houston and then had to fly to Atlanta and didn't have two of their best hitters.
Right. No Ortiz and no Hanley. Yeah. And he
so
stinks against
I'm
lefties.
I'm not too excited about that.
Right.
And the other thing I'll say, Danny Salazar, I was watching quite a bit of that start. He really is a guy, maybe other than Chris Archer, is a guy that cannot get squeezed. And he got squeezed a little bit against the Twins and then had a terribly unfortunate. He was like 80 pitches with 2 outs in the 5th inning. Francisco Lindor lets a ball go off of his glove. They foul off several pitches. One of them lands like inches away from the right fielder's glove. He picks somebody off and they screw that up on review. It was just a really unfortunate. The stat line looks awful. He wasn't that bad.
Chris, seeing the walks from Garrett Richards, who gave up 1 unearned run in 6 2/3, only 3 hits, 5 walks though, and so far a 1.27 whip, would you consider putting Garrett Richards on the market, try selling him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea just because his ERA is a lot lower than I think you can reasonably expect it to be. I do continue to find myself really interested in the small gains that he's making this season. Swinging strike rate is up. He's throwing the changeup a pretty significant amount of time, given the fact that it was not a part of his repertoire for each of the last 3 seasons. He's throwing it 9% of the time right now. I'm definitely not like 100% selling high on him. If someone wants to blow me away for him, I'll take it, but I remain intrigued by him.
That's a really confusing part of my starting pitcher rankings. That 25 to 30 range, 25 to 32 range. And that's where you've got Jordan Zimmermann. You've got Garrett Richards. You've got Kenta Maeda. You've got Taijuan Walker.
Yeah.
And Michael Walker. I mean, those guys seem to be kind of swapping spots every start at this point.
Yeah. You never know what to expect from Michael Walker. He really frustrates me. All right, I'm going to ask you to rank these fringy starting pitchers, and then we're going to go to the top 12 surprises. Fringy starting pitchers, Rick Porcello, Ross Stripling, Drew Pomeranz, Nate Eovaldi, Kevin Gausman. Porcello, Stripling, Pomeranz, Eovaldi, Gausman.
And are we assuming for purpose, is this rest of season ranking?
Yes.
Adam?
Yeah, rest of season.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
I will go Porcello, Gausman.
Porcello, Gausman, Eovaldi, Pomeranz, Stripling.
Okay.
Stripling's going to be on an innings limit. I think he only threw 74 innings last season, so you're probably not seeing him in the majors past, what, July? Even in a best-case scenario, I'm not sure how high his upside is. The strikeouts haven't been there. He's looking like a ground ball guy, and those guys are kind of boring unless they're really good at it. So yeah,
I guess the point I would make is Porcello and Gausman are on a slightly different level than the other three for me.
I think Eovaldi's right there with them.
No way. Eovaldi?
Oh, okay. Wow.
Nate Eovaldi?
I think that speaks more to my fairly lukewarm opinion on Porcello and Gausman.
Okay. I think I would take a shot on Gausman.
Sure.
64%. See what he
can do. The unknown is always more fun than the known.
Right. Top
12. The unknown's throwing like 240 innings in the majors.
Yeah. I looked at the top 12 at four positions and came up with two surprises at each position. Let's start with first base. Mark Trumbo is your number three first baseman in points, and he's your number one first baseman in Roto. Trumbo's hitting .366 with five home runs, two walks, and 16 strikeouts. What's the best way? I mean, should we do this as a buy low, sell high kind of thing, or are you buying it? What do you think about Mark Trumbo, top three first baseman?
The Believe-O-Meter? He looks really good right now. I have a hard time believing that he's made some huge transition at age 30. But he wasn't bad last year. I think he was one of Scott's sleepers, if I remember right. So he's tearing the cover off the ball. I don't believe at his age you're going to get somebody to buy high on him. So I'd probably just ride it out.
Okay. But if you could trade him for Freddie Freeman, you would trade Trumbo for Freeman, right?
Yes.
I'd rather have Freeman than Trumbo, yes.
All right, Brandon Belt. I don't know that we've talked about Brandon Belt much. Somehow he is the number 7 first baseman in points, number 11 in Roto, and for a guy who usually has a terrible walk-to-strikeout ratio, 13 walks, 12 strikeouts so far for Brandon Belt, .275 with 3 home runs and 11 RBIs and 3 doubles.
I would like Brandon Belt so much more if he played in a different park. I think he's a really good hitter. It's just not he plays half his games in a park that totally saps his power, which makes it difficult for him to live up to his potential. I think he's a low-end starting first baseman.
Let's go to second base. Two surprises at second base. Neil Walker. Neil Walker has 8 home runs. His only extra base hits of the season. He's the number 5 second baseman in points, number 3 in Roto. My goodness, Neil Walker. 2 walks, 17 strikeouts. Oh, and we can now call him Neil Walker because he has walked twice instead of Neil Walker. What do you think, guys? What the heck was that?
That was a... I was watching... I was on a page and a pop-up video played.
Thanks, Chris. Excellent stuff. Real sharp broadcast today. Well, anyway, Neil Walker, guys. Anybody buying this this outburst from Neil Walker?
No.
Why not?
I mean, Heath might be. I will speak for myself. No.
I'm not buying this outburst. At the same time, I think you could say that we all ranked him to be worse than he's been over the last 3 years. And he doesn't necessarily have to be worse than he's been over the last 3 years.
Okay.
I mean, he hit 23 home runs last year. For a second baseman, that's pretty elite.
Two years ago.
I'm sorry, it's 16 last year, which is still not bad for a second baseman. I would not be surprised at all if he hits 20 home runs this year.
Well, he only needs 12. Right. But here's the big thing. Entering this season, he had 6 home runs against left-handed pitchers. He has 3 this season. He has a 2,091 OPS against lefties in 11 plate appearances and a 749 OPS against righties. Mm-hmm. He has a 242, 266, 484 triple slash line against righty. That sounds like what you would expect from Neil Walker. Neil Walker's been very Neil Walker-ish against right-handed pitchers. And then he's had 7 hits and 11 at-bats against lefties.
Maybe he spent a lot of time in the offseason working on his right-hand swing.
He didn't.
How do you know? He's a switch hitter.
Don't play devil's advocate.
Moving on. Yeah. Josh Harrison is the number 8 second baseman in points and number 5 in rotisserie. Josh Harrison, this is a guy who has 5 doubles and a triple, but no home runs. But he does have 4 steals in 4 attempts, and Harrison's hitting .329. Are you buying Josh Harrison as a top 12 second baseman?
No, but he's fringy. He's startable.
I'm wondering, and I don't remember at all, where he finished in 2014. Because that was really the only time where he's gotten regular playing time.
Well, he had an opportunity for regular playing time last season, and he was not very good and kind of lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he was terrible last year. He had .287 with a .327 on base. He just had a .390 slug, which isn't good.
It's pretty bad.
But he hit 13 home runs, stole 18 bases in 2014 with a .315 average.
And like a what, .380 BABIP?
.350, .380 this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine.
Okay.
I think really the thing is there do have to be 12 second basemen that finish in the top 12.
Yes, he could be one of them. I wouldn't like bet on him being one of them, but he's a fine like low-end starting option.
Well, who would you rather have rest of season, Neil Walker or Josh Harrison?
Neil Walker.
Would you rather have Josh Harrison or Joe Panic?
Joe Panic.
Let's save third base and shortstop for tomorrow, and we'll let you on your Daily Fantasy Live podcast tell everybody who to start in FanDuel. So how about some emails from Kyle at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I know you can't really bank on wins from a pitcher, but how much does the fact that the Cubs look like they're going to score a million runs help lower-end guys like Lackey, Hamill, and Hendricks?
It certainly helps them. I don't know how to quantify it. I would expect them to have more wins than other similarly skilled pitchers.
Well, I guess you could quantify it by looking at the Blue Jays last season. How many wins above expectations did their lower-end guys get?
Yeah, I feel like their lower-end guys were lower than Hamill and Hendricks and Lackey. Yes. So I don't know if... I mean, you're talking about Aaron Sanchez and Drew Hutchinson, who sometimes couldn't even get to the fifth inning to get a win.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be good if they had some mediocre starters. I don't know...
Okay.
I mean, I think it's going to help them.
It definitely helps.
Kyle Hendricks pitching tonight against the Brewers. Something to keep in mind with Hendricks, he last year had a major problem against the third time through the order. He had a major problem third time through the order. That sort of manifested in one of his starts this year. It's just something to keep in mind. He'll probably do fine against the Brewers, but that's the next step for him, going deeper into games and not being just... He's awesome first two times through. He's got to be better the rest of the way. Okay, next email. Let's see who it's from. It's from Tom from Chicago. He says, "Dear Roger, Troy, and Tony..." I'll look that up. Is Adrian Beltre a sell high? Get the Aegis Heath on the horn.
Was that Roger Goodell? No.
Troy Aikman and...
No, well, Troy Brown is like works for the league now or something. Troy Vincent.
Is Adrian Beltre a sell high? No. No, I mean, he's so consistent. Oh. I know he's 37, but...
Gosh, guys, I'm sorry. That's clearly Cowboys quarterbacks.
Oh.
Staubach?
Yeah, Staubach, Aikman, Romo. Aikman.
That's terrible.
Don't sell high on
No,
Adrian
do not
Beltre.
Sell high on Adrian Beltre. Heath will try to tell you to do it, but
I don't know that there's that. I mean, I think
he's great.
He's probably going to hit around 300 with 18 home runs. I don't know that he's on that much of a different pace. He's maybe on pace for 25. I don't think he'll do that, but whatever.
An email from Sultan. He says, "Hey, Bruce, Dick, and Alfred. I play in a shallow 10-team head-to-head points league. Should I pick up the resurgent Joe Mauer and drop the slumping Prince Fielder?"
Would you
drop? No, right?
Nope.
No. Okay. From Joe. "Hey, CC Fawn and Elizabeth. I know these people." No new girl fans on the show today.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, Adam.
Oh, I forgot. So why don't you jump in?
It's
right.
Good.
Would you drop JT Realmuto for Yasmani Grandal?
Yes,
in a heartbeat.
Yes. That doesn't mean I mean, Realmuto's decent. I'm not sure he can hit righties yet, but Grandal's just better.
So Realmuto makes his living off lefties?
So far, yes.
And what have we been saying all show? The Marlins have the fewest at-bats against lefties.
Yeah.
But you still drop him for Grandal.
Yes.
Matt from St. Louis. "Hey, Lou, Babe, and Earl."
He explains it.
Yeah, I mean, that I would have gotten it, FYI. It's Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, and Earl Combs, who Matt points out the best positional player trio by WAR since 1900.
I'm guessing that's not much of a contribution from Earl Combs.
No, he was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the other two guys were quite a bit better.
Yeah, but okay, fine. Look up his 1927 numbers. See what Earl Combs did.
Look up his 1927 numbers.
See what he did. I'd like to know. 12-team mixed roto. "Due to a good late draft and free agent value, I'm overloaded at outfield. I have Fowler, Puig, Marte, McCutcheon, Parra, Pence, Piscotty, and Saunders. I can only start 5.
WAR.
How much?
6.8. That's fine.
He's very good. He was a very good player. I could use starting pitcher. So who? Okay, he's got all these outfielders. Who would you trade? Again, the outfielders are Fowler, Puig, Marte, McCutcheon, Parra, Pence, Piscotty, and Saunders. I'm trading Fowler. Best trade value out there.
Yeah, I don't want to trade Puig, Marte, McCutcheon. I don't really want to trade Piscotty. I would try to package two of Fowler, Parra, Pence, and Saunders. And I would probably aim, I mean, if you could trade two of those guys for somebody in that 25 to 30 range that I just talked about, the Zimmerman, the Richards, the especially the Taiwan Walker, somebody in that group for those two, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Let's grade some trades and then we'll end the show. This grade, the trade is from James in Spokane, Washington. 12-team Roto League, I am in dead last in power, but he does have Trout and J.D. Martinez, so hopefully that will change. But he lost Carlos Carrasco, so James has Arrieta. He would give up Arrieta and get Chris Davis or Todd Frazier. We'll go with Davis. So give up Arrieta, go Davis. Oh, sorry. Arrieta 4, Davis and Stroman.
I think that's too big of a drop-off in pitching after you lost Carrasco. C minus.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
And one more grade of the trade. This is from Ben in Bama. "I've been offered Carlos Martinez for Brandon Belt."
A plus.
Yeah, A plus.
Do it
go
now.
Go run.
Quick.
Yeah, okay, that's an A plus. All right, that'll end the show. Good stuff, guys. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Anything you guys else? Did a great job today.
Anything else to contribute? Chris, how are you doing in the Chris Towers Podcast League?
Not so well. I first of all, I don't like this format where you get 10 outcomes each week. You should get a win or a loss. But I'm doing poorly.
What an excuse.
No, it's not an excuse. I'm just noting for the record.
No, I hate that. I hate that, Chris. Come on. You're telling me you'd rather have, if I beat you 10-0, I should be 1-0?
Yeah.
No.
I have decided also that
Let me quote one of the great philosophers of our time. I can't remember the character's name, but the guy that Vin Diesel plays in Fast and the Furious. Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, Adam. Winning's winning.
I disagree. Winning is...
Oh, you disagree with Vin Diesel?
And on many, many things.
That explains so much.
All right, that's it for the show. For Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, I'm Adam Azer. We're back tomorrow. We're grading your trades. See you later.